Hello, everyone. Welcome. It's Irene, obviously, and it's our first training call for this round. And for those who are on Zoom live, I just did a little debrief of live etiquette. For those on the recording, not important for you so much. But one thing that I do want to mention and say with the training calls, and this is with any content in Smart Body, Smart Mind. I know many of you, this is the first time you maybe have been on a live call with me. This is your first time doing SBSM. It's okay to stop. By that, I mean, if you feel that, you know, even within the first 20 minutes or 10 minutes or 5 minutes of me getting into some teaching, you're sensing something. And I'm not saying that's going to happen, but let's just say that happens. Take care of yourself. As we go through and into the training calls, you'll know what that means. As you get into more of the lessons, you know what that means. We'll do a little rundown of the basics in a second here. So just really know that, pace yourself. This is recorded. Obviously, those watching the recording, you know that already, but anybody here live, this is recorded. We transcribe every word from all the training calls and Q&A. It takes a day or 36 hours to get that up so that it's there for you to read. Reading is one way to titrate the information and the learning. And the other way that sometimes people take in the training calls and also the Q&As is they'll just listen in the background. So that's one way to titrate, to make the intensity, if it is intense, less so. The thing with the training calls is, of course, I'm seeing many alum here. You can come back and redo these over and over again, because while the material stays the same, I might be a little different. My examples might be a little different on that day. And you are different each time we go through rounds. And so I can guarantee you that beginner's mind is essential, even when you've done this 10 times, right? And there are some folk here who have. So it's like rereading one of your favorite books. You find details that you didn't see the first time, or your favorite movie, you know, you notice things. The other bit of logistics, handouts. Who has their handouts for the training call? Some of you may have them, some of you may not. That's fine. If you don't have them, if you've chosen not to use the handout, that's okay. The handouts are all on the training call page, right where you found the link to come in here. And there's two kinds. One is a handout that has fill in the blanks. So what that means is you take pen and paper and you write along with me and I give you the answers. You can also go through with the ones with the answers. And that's just there in case you choose not to do that and you want to see the answers ahead of time. There's either way works. The reason I brought in Q&A, fill in the blank, is it does activate different parts of our learning when we write. So I am a note taker. I encourage you, if you know, feel free to take notes, take extra notes, make scribbles, do whatever works for you to bring the learning into your brain and system. All right. So let's get started with a little basic practice. So before we get into the theory, I have here at the very top, let's practice the nervous system basics. So what that means is we will do a little tuning in. And I would love to invite you to just see what your eyes want to do. Do they want to stay open? Do they want to look away from the screen? Everyone's in different time zones. So I know for many, maybe you've been looking at a screen all day, and this is, you know, the last thing you want to do in your evening is look at another screen. So do you need to just take a rest from looking? Or maybe it's first thing and it's actually feels okay. But allow your focus and your attention to wander to where it wants to wander. And if that wandering is to close your eyes, you can do that. Now, this prompt is orienting, which was one of the first lessons last week. So bring in this idea of orienting into this moment while we're going into this training call. Maybe you're orienting to cleaning up something on your desk. Maybe you're orienting to getting comfortable. Maybe you want this orienting to end so you can get into the theory. Maybe there's a sensation that you notice as you start to orient in your body. So, of course, there's no right and there's no wrong. It's just a prompt to see what you notice. So one could say these nervous system basics, I tend to call them now nervous system health basics, this connection to the external. One is also to follow impulse. So I blended those in, right? What is your impulse in the moment? Is the impulse to stand up? Maybe you've been sitting all day and you need to move a little bit. So listen to that as well. Maybe there's a need to stretch, or someone just said is yawning is starting to happen. And as you tune in to any impulse to move or to be more still or to, listen to even your temperature. Are you warm enough? Are you too cool? Does the light need to change in your room? Also, notice if you can feel the ground under you. The ground under you. And that could be anything. That could be the chair. That could be your feet on the floor. That could be if you're sitting on a sofa or a couch. My grandma would call them a Chesterfield. Does anybody remember that name? Couch, Chesterfield. Maybe you're outside. Maybe there's some of you in warmer climates where you can be outside right now. There might be some of you in your car. I've known some folks have to go into their car to have some quiet if there's a busy household. So feel whatever it is that might be under you. And just be interested in that pressure and the fact that you can feel that contact. That's happening as a result of your sensory nervous system. There's sensory receptors in your muscle, in areas just outside of your bone, skin. Obviously, our skin gives us a clue as to whether or not we're warm or cold. Our hairs might stand up or we might sweat. And then the final kind of element, and this does not mean it is an order of importance. It's just the way the human language works. You have to order these things, is your breathing. What has your breath been doing as you've been looking around or sensing what your body might need? As you feel the ground under you, maybe as you shift position as I'm about to. I was getting a little sloppy in my posture there. So, how is your breath? How does your breath shift as you pay attention to these things? Was it something that you were aware of? Was it something that came into your focus when I mentioned it? Here's a question. Here's a prompt. When I mentioned your breath, did you find that you were holding your breath? Was there a tightness in it? I feel, let's see a few nods. This is very common in our human culture. I don't know if it's culture in our humanness, as we will hold, we will clench. And one of the desires as we get more regulated is that that breath becomes freer, and that that breath comes as it should based on the activity that you're doing. So if you're doing more movement, your respiration should shift. When we're at stillness, just listening, learning, we actually need very little oxygen exchange because there's not a lot of metabolism going on. But the one thing, and some of you had said in the chat, your chest is tight, or if the belly is tight, or if the groin muscles are tight, or if the throat is tight for holding something in, and you'll learn this as we move through SBSM, this space in here. And if you haven't touched your own body today in an intentional way, now would be an okay time to do that, just to sort of say hello. This area, as it becomes more in flow, and we'll talk about something called coherence today, as it loosens and softens and gets bigger, and there's more space. I'll talk about swimming pools and beach balls today. So, we're going to expand our swimming pool. That's an analogy for the body. As that gets bigger, as we do these practices, the neurosensory exercises, what happens is the breathing starts to actually just become easier. Not because the respiration is getting smarter, it's because the body is having more space. There's less tight. Things are less stuck. Things are less braced for protection, or things are less collapsed. And when we're collapsed, we also decrease the space in our chest cavity and in our organs. And so all of these things, one could say, are partially in service to our respiration starting to become just way easier. And that also influences our cardiovascular system, our heart system, all these things. So breathing is important, but it's not enough to just force the breath when all these pieces of our body are clenched and tight and storing stuff. So just to recap this idea of orienting, this idea of following impulse, this idea of where's my ground under me? Breath, movement, etc. So these are sort of the basics that we go back and forth with over and over and over again. So, curious, how are you sensing things now that we've done 10 or so minutes, if that, it hasn't even been that, of just going through some of these basics. If the chat is easy for you, you can put a little word in there. If there's one word that describes what you notice now, let that share, please. If you want to, you don't have to. I'll read some of them out. So settled, calm, calmer, relaxed, more present. I won't be able to read all of them this quickly. Integrated. Grounded, tired, sad, a little angsty, more connected, tension, aware, bright, panic, discomfort, connected. Thank you. Headache. So, thank you, everyone. So, tears, warmer. So, as you can see, it isn't just calm and more space, there's a variety of experiences, and that's completely normal because we're human and we're all different. But the purpose of just coming into the basics is not to calm us, and it's not to regulate us, because something just like this is not sufficient to fully regulate us. It's to bring us into awareness of what's going on in our body. And in our lives, we tend to push through the day and go, 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 and we can completely disconnect. Not only from our body, but from the environment. Have you ever driven down a road and you wonder how you got to where you were going? Be honest. I've just, how did I get here? You're on autopilot. Maybe it's something you've done 100 times, or you've, moved through and done something and you've like, did I do that? Did I actually put the laundry in the dryer? I don't remember. One could say that's a memory thing, but it's also being disconnected from the present moment thing. Right. And so part of getting into the present moment is not only for safety, it's so that we are engaged with our world and what's going on. And many of us will say that, yeah, I don't remember a lot from this portion of my life, right? Or I don't have many memories from this time. And it's not so much, it's not brain damage, it's that there wasn't a conscious awareness and a connection with the whole body in that time period. And what we'll find is that as you start to become a bit more online, you might start to have memories, not just memories that aren't good, but good memories might start to come back, things that you had forgotten you have done. Okay. Training call. Let's get into it. So, first line here. So, again, for those who are new here, I literally read these through. We go through it. I add little bits as I need. And your job is to keep feeling those basics that we just went through as we go through the theory. Okay. So, swimming pool and beach ball analogy. Some of you have maybe seen this. Who has seen this? Just to let me know. Of course, I can't see all of you, but some of you, if have, will say yes. Some of you probably this you haven't seen this. This was originally taught on my healing trauma series, which is on this SPSM program page under the additional resources. So if you haven't seen it, I recommend at least watching the first video. So, swimming pool and beach ball analogy. So there's a pretty picture there of, and make use your imagination, that's a swimming pool. And in that swimming pool, we've got beach balls of different sizes. So the swimming pool, this is the first set of lines here. So this is where we fill in the blanks. The swimming pool is your body. If I'm really simple, it's everything in your body. It's your brain, your nervous systems, your organs, your tissues, your sensations, electrical impulses, emotions, it's everything, everything. So if you consider your body a vessel, what's everything in the vessel? Everything from the skin inwards. So that's the first sort of four lines. And then the next line down below the pool, B, the balls. So those balls in the pool, the balls are your stressors. We could say stress, stressors, stressful events. And this is things happening in the moment or things that have occurred in the past. So those balls represent stuff that's stressful. And past traumas, shock traumas, early traumas, all the things. This is a very rudimentary, crude example, but you will find that you will use it over and over again as we move through deeper, more in-depth theory. So C, the next line down, it's all about. So it's all about, when I say it's all about this healing we're doing, this regulation we're doing, smart body, smart mind. This is all about the first line there, more space and release and flow. I'll repeat that again. It's all about more space and release and flow. So if we think back to what I was saying about your breathing, and I already mentioned it, when we have a lot of shutdown in our body or a lot of fight and it's just tight and everything's in, there's not a lot of space. This is literal, but it's also energetic. So what we want to do as we improve our nervous system and our body is we want to soften up the edges. We want to open up things so that there can be flow. and we can release things that have been stuck for so long. I'll keep explaining this as we go on. Next line down, final word or final sentence. Flow, this is in brackets. Flow is a simple word for coherence. Coherence is spelt COHERENCE. 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 If you spell it wrong, not a biggie. For fun, even just say it out loud. I sometimes like to suggest just say the words coherence. That's what we want. We want flow, we want coherence. Now, of course, when we're in a trauma response, there isn't flow, right? There isn't a flow of energy. Things are in a threatened pattern. That can be acute, or that can be something that's been trapped for a long time. And so we want to shift that. So, page two. So, this is where you're going to have to draw. It's very simple. So, flow and coherence explained. So, here's the instructions. This is the most complex thing you'll have to do on these handouts for the entire 12 weeks. So, you're going to draw four circles, like in a line. So, circle, 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 circle. They can be small, they can be big. They can be squiggles, it doesn't matter. They can be ovals. Not rectangles or squares, something that has a nice round edge. So four circles in a row. What you're going to do, you know that symbol that's a figure eight, but on the side, someone would call it the infinity symbol, right? A figure eight on its side. You're going to take a figure eight and you're going to connect circle one and circle two, like a chain link. And then you're going to connect circle two and three, and then you're going to connect circle three and four. So you're just going to connect those with some kind of flowy figure eight infinity symbol. So they're linked. And then you're going to take another sort of circle, and you might have to go across the lines or the words here, but you're going to connect circle four to circle one with a circle. So it's a big circle, lots of circles, just so that they're all, so that the final one and the first one have a connection point. And then the finishing touches within each circle, or oval, or whatever you did, draw another figure eight. So, what this masterpiece is it is to describe and depict our body, the connections between all the organs, the connections between the cells, the connections between memories. This is, like I said, quite crude, but it's just to see we want to have flow. We want to have coherence between all of our systems. As I talk with my hand, as I do, right? I want my fingers to connect to my shoulder, right? I want to feel that my pelvis and my head are connected. You don't have to go around doing these movements all day long. But these are some of the movements you will learn. Some of the lessons are going to teach you in later labs how to connect the head and the pelvis via the spine, via the ribs. And then, of course, within those ribs are your lungs and your heart and your organs. We'll work with breath, we'll work with the organ systems, we'll work with the kidneys, the adrenals, and all the spaces inside. And so, a big part of us restoring regulation is getting this flow between everything from the tip of your hair all the way down to your baby toenail, right? Getting flow going. And the first line down there underneath the circles, having good flow means good coherence. So, there's that word again. And I forgot to mention the title of today's call is Coherence and Flow and Containment and Capacity. So we're focused on this importance of flow and coherence right now. Now I'm going to describe more of the swimming pool and beach balls a few pages forward, but we'll go through containment now. So what is containment? So I'll just read this first. So containment is staying embodied. That's the first word. Containment is staying embodied and connected to the environment. That's the next word. And your internal state while experiencing bodily experiences, no matter how intense or activating. I'll read that again. So containment, think of a container, right? If you think about a container that holds food or water, right? And your body is containing your organs, your blood, your lymph, your cells. So containment is staying embodied and connected to the environment and your internal state while experiencing bodily experiences, sensations, feelings, images, thoughts, actions, behaviors, no matter how intense or activating, right? So sensations might be butterflies in your stomach or heat across the face when you get a little embarrassed. Feelings, obviously, those are our emotions. Sadness, anger, joy, disgust. Images is pretty straightforward, you know, seeing things in our mind's eye. We could say memories. Thoughts are pretty self-explanatory. You know, who here has thoughts? Everyone. We think about things, some things good, some things not great. Has anybody here found that sometimes they get so immersed in their thoughts that they lose track of time, they lose track of where their body is in space? That would show that those thoughts are breaking, we're not connected in a way that we keep containment, right? Or we feel sensations that are so intense that we just break down and we can't handle them. So the goal, the job of us here of Smart Body, Smart Mind is to increase our capacity back to these circles, our flow. We're going to make our swimming pools bigger, our bodies bigger in terms of our ability to sense things so that when there's a sensation that comes up, when there's an emotion, when there's a thought that isn't nice, we can be with it and not flip into more activation or shutdown. These things will occur. The key is, how are we engaging with them and staying connected to them without going into overwhelm or collapsing into shutdown? Because chances are, you're here because in the past, or perhaps right now, with symptoms, there's too much, right? And so we're learning how to make our system smarter and this ability to feel without going too far one way or too far the other way. Okay, so next few lines here. One note I will say, when we are feeling things that are really intense, one of the ways that we build capacity has nothing to do with the body. It has to do with getting out of the body and into the environment. That's why for some, orienting can be very helpful, because it breaks that intensity. So that's one way to oddly stay contained, is to orient, right? So let's get to the next line. I gave away the first answer. So to increase this flow, space, containment, and capacity, and have more chance for release, and by release, I mean release of the old traumas. That's what those beach balls are in the swimming pool. So to have more chance for release, we want to work on and practice these six things. Now, I give you six things. This does not mean that there are only six things, but for where we are in the first 2 weeks of SBSM, these are the six things I'm going to mention. Some of them you will have already learned, some of them you will learn as we go forward in the next 3 weeks, 2 weeks, 2 weeks. So the first one is orienting. Orienting. Trusted, timely, go back to orienting. This is something that we will revisit over and over and over again. Number two, self-awareness. And these are in no order of importance, by the way. This is just how I've ordered them. Number three, awareness. And I'll break these down more explicitly as we move on today. Number four, follow your impulse. I always like to abbreviate it FYI. So FYI, follow your impulse. Number five, this is going to be new for the newbies. Joints, joints, so the joints of our body, and diaphragms. These are lessons that we'll get into in week three and week five. Joints and diaphragms. Six, I like to abbreviate this KA, but it stands for kidney adrenal. Kidney adrenal interface. Kidney adrenal interface. All right, so those are six elements. These are all neurosensory exercises, they're practices, they're principles that we will continue to work with over and over again. And just a reminder, everyone, just a prompt. We want to keep the chat as quiet as possible. If there is a question about something that I'm teaching and Jen can help, then please pop it in there. But if possible, take in what is happening right now as we move through these basics. Super important. Okay, number three, page three. So I'm going to go through these a little more specifically. So orienting. Orienting, this is page three, sparks up the social engagement nervous system. So who has gone through those first biology of stress videos where I break down the difference between the sympathetic and the parasympathetic, right? And then the parasympathetic has a whole bunch of other branches, and one of those branches is called the ventral vagal of the parasympathetic. So this is where this comes in. So sparks up, orienting sparks up the social engagement nervous system, which is the ventral vagal of the parasympathetic nervous system. The words there is ventral vagal. Ventral just means front. And so from a perspective of anatomy, it means that the vagus nerve is coming in front of the brain stem when it comes out of the brain. So it comes out of your brain and it goes in front of the brain stem and it goes to ear, face, these voice box structures, the pharynx, the larynx is what it's called. It also goes to the heart and it goes to everything above the diaphragm. Orienting is what we need to survive. There's defensive orienting, and we'll get into this deeper as we move through. So there's if there's a loud bang or something startles us, what does your head and eyes do sometimes? Right? It'll look. Right? You see dogs, cats, they hear something, they're really smart. They're very differentiated. Their ears will just perk up. Right? That's them defensively orienting to potential threat or something. So we want that. For some of us, that defensive orienting is going to be excessive. And that's too much, that's hypervigilance, always looking, always looking, always scanning for danger. The opposite, and this was my physiology when I got into this work, is something could happen, a bomb could go off beside me and I wouldn't even know it was there. That's maybe a bit extreme, but I would have no startle response. So when I got into this work, I had no startle response. This is why I could jump off of mountains and do crazy sports stuff and be fine. I had no fear. And so we want our orienting to be in this beautiful space where when there's an actual threat, we perk up and we defensively orient. But if it's just, someone coming in the coffee shop door and there's a little bell thing, we're not constantly looking, looking, looking. We know that that's not a threat, right? So there's this extreme, these spectrums of defensive orienting that's healthy, and then excessive defensive orienting, which is hypervigilance. And then we would say hypo orienting, defensive orienting, where we're not even realizing that there's a danger around us. So that's defensive orienting in terms of ventral vagal would be, wow, look at that beautiful tree, or checking out the sunset, talking to someone, nodding, seeing, their face, checking out their colorful clothes, looking at art, even listening to music. That orients us with this ventral vagal. Have you ever been a little anxious or a little in a sympathetic and you put on some music and it calms you, right? Or you talk to someone and it helps you calm down? That is that ventral vagal sparking up. So we practice it deliberately in this course to start to remember, oh yeah, I can look out my window. It's right there. Right? Or I can just sit and look. Or, oh, I just startled. Isn't that interesting? Was that an actual startle response that needed to be there, or was that a little too excessive? So these are the things as you work through this material for you to be aware of, like, oh, wow, you're right. I don't even flinch when this happens, right? So we can start to negate these general defensive orienting strategies because maybe we've had so many times that we had to defensively orient, our system just isn't up for it anymore. That's shutdown. That's freeze. Okay. I'll never forget the first time I felt my startle response was when I was just finished my somatic experiencing training, the first portions, and I was on a bridge that was crossing a real low river. It wasn't high. It was like you could probably touch the water. And I was just orienting to the beauty of the river. So that I knew how to do, even though I was in functional freeze. And a couple walked onto the bridge, and I was so immersed that I didn't hear or see them. And as soon as they stood, it created that wave. And I jumped, and I think I might have even exclaimed out loud, and they felt terrible that I had gotten scared, but I actually was like, wow, I just had a startle response. So that showed that I was starting to come out of functional freeze, right? Because if that was a cougar or a bear on that bridge, I would want to know. Of course, it was humans and it was fine. So that's just a little intro into orienting, defensive versus exploratory. Something that we definitely want to pay attention to as we go through our daily life. Number two, awareness. This is pretty simple. And in some ways, it's also connected to exploratory orienting. So it is with the world and your environment. So what we're seeing out there. What we're seeing out there. And I see a few questions coming in. I'll just address this. Someone asked, can you be in freeze and hypervigilance at the same time? It really depends on the person. So this is where it's not cut and dry. One might be really good at going into shutdown when they're doing their mountain sports. I'll use myself as an example, but then they go into a social situation and they have vigilance because they're not as comfortable with people, but they're comfortable with the outdoors. Right. And so this is where there's nuance within this. Okay, number three, self-awareness. Self-awareness with yourself. That's the first word. Yourself and your insides, also known as, AKA, your interoception. This is an important word that we will use over and over again. Intero basically means internal. Interoception, your perception of your internal environment. When we're babies, this is what we have to tell us something's off. We're hungry. We feel something isn't right. We're hot. We're cold. We sense that internal environment. And typically we let our caregivers know with a cry, with a scream, with something. And then of course it's the caregiver's job to attune to that baby's expression of their interoception being off. And then that connection is what creates regulation over time. So self-awareness of yourself and your insides, also known as your interoception, is in many ways the bread and butter of the work we do when we're healing, especially early trauma, developmental trauma, where the accuracy of having our needs met, it just wasn't there. We maybe needed something, but we weren't being connected to. And this doesn't have to be as a result of neglect. It could be baby was in an incubator because they were preemie or they had a surgery and they needed connection, but they literally, nobody was there, right? So this building of interoception is one of the biggest pillars of this work, getting accurate with what's happening inside. For some of us, our interoception is too much information is coming to us and it's intense and overwhelming. For others, it's like, what? You mean your digestion actually moves, right? Like there's gurgles. I didn't know that. There will be some folks here who have never felt their digestion move. And so when that starts to move, it can be like, whoa, there's a monster in there. What's happening? And this is where understanding the physiology is important. It's like, oh yeah, my stomach's there and this is how it's supposed to move. And I've never felt that before. So self-awareness is key. Number four, listening, following your impulse, follow your impulse. Listening to your body's organic needs. That's the word, needs. So one question that we always get, how do I know what is accurate impulse and what is not good impulse? And my answer to that is you learn as you go along. For some of us, our impulses have not always been healthy. These impulses are more physiological. So that is, I'm cold. I better put some extra clothing on, or I'm warm. I better get some airflow. Hunger. I'm hungry. Okay, it's time to eat. I'm full. I don't need to keep eating. Right? It's a habit that I know many of us have when we're bored. I've fallen into this trap. Do you ever just go to the refrigerator and open it and look? Even though you're not hungry, what is that? You know, and it doesn't mean we have an eating disorder. It's just this thing that humans do. And so, you know, watch those impulses. And when we get back to those bare basics, I like to always say, what would the animals do? When the animals need to go to the bathroom, do they look around and ask for permission? No, they're lucky. They're out in the plains. They can do whatever they want. Of course, with humans, with us, we need to keep things fairly sanitary. So we have, you know, toilets and places to do that. But if you live in a home where you have that, see if there's habits where you hold in your urine or your bowel movements more than you have to. And as an adult, even as a child, you learn how to hold that stuff in, usually because something didn't happen that was good when we were young. We had to go to school. We weren't allowed. Maybe we had some accidents and we have bodily shame around these things. And so we hold this stuff in. So part of, as simple as this sounds, learning to regulate and grow capacity in our swimming pool is to not hold in these bodily responses. A baby doesn't, right? They fully, you've had a newborn baby, they might pee all over you. They're not going to ask if it's time to go, to the toilet. That's often why they will wear diapers. But of course, there's some cultures where you don't even need that because they're so attuned to their parents. The parents see the look on their face when they need to express their bowels or their bladder. I kind of went off on a segue there, but I'm just using that as a point that we want to really listen to those impulses because that is right at the essence of the autonomic nervous system. So by actually listening to those responses and following those bodily organic needs, you are helping heal your autonomic nervous system, but it's like a reverse engineering way of doing it. So you're listening to your organs, you're listening to your temperature, you're listening to your hunger cues, your fatigue cues. It's even, I have energy, I need to move. I don't want to sit and be calm and meditate. I need to get out for a walk. I need to punch the air, right? Those are also those impulses. Please let yourself sneeze if you feel the need to sneeze. I know my husband, Seth, worked in food service so long, and only recently he's started to allow his sneezes to fully come out because when you're in food service, you have to hold in your sneezes, right? So that is even a way that we create pressure inside when we hold that in. Same with coughing, passing gas, et cetera. So, following your impulses seems simple, but it actually is such an important thing to track and honor. Five, joints and diaphragms. So, these are little containers and spaces, and I'll explain what that means in a second, that need to be open. That's the word. Open. And resilient. And we could also add in and in flow. So this comes back to those circles that you drew. So little containers and spaces that need to be open, but not just stuck open, they need to have flow in them. So joints are an anatomical term to describe any two bones coming together. So if you do this with your hands, or you do this with your elbows, or you do some movements with your spine, or anything where your bones are opening and closing, these are your joints opening and closing. Believe it or not, but within our joints, we hold memory, we hold emotion, we hold sensation. We hold tensions and traumas. And this isn't just, I had an elbow injury and the injuries in my elbow. If you have something scary happen that is more visually scary, it isn't just your eyes that go into threat, your whole physiology, right? Adrenaline's released, the stress hormones are released. Everything gets tight. And if we can't get out of that, if it keeps happening after we can't hold on, we collapse. So there is an influx of energy and all these pieces that can come in and store into our joints. So we will work with the joints next week in lab three. Diaphragms. So most of us have heard of the diaphragm in terms of the respiratory diaphragm, right? You breathe in. You fill up the lungs, the diaphragm goes down to make space. It's very easy to find a picture of this online. If you just look up diaphragm, it will show you the respiratory diaphragm. It's like a dome. And when we blow out, it lifts. So it goes up and down, kind of like an accordion. In the osteopathic traditions, which is a tradition of body work that I highly respect, they also use the term diaphragm, but it's not just the respiratory diaphragm. And I'll show this with my hands and I'll explain. There's these levels at the top of the head, through the skull, at the eyes, at the throat, at the heart, at the respiration. at the pelvis and at the feet that are also called diaphragms. They do line up with the chakras if we look at Eastern tradition. So there's no coincidence, I don't think, that the Eastern chakras line up with the Western, I don't even like saying East West, but those diaphragms. It's also where our glands are. There's hypothalamus pituitary here. There's the thyroid here. The thymus is here. The adrenals are at the respiratory. And then, of course, the reproductive organs, the ovaries and the gonads are at that base. So we have this lining up of energy centers, osteopathic diaphragms, and our glands that secrete chemicals. All of this gets influenced by the autonomic nervous system. So, similar to the diaphragms, when we have a shock, it's not just one diaphragm in the throat because we went that gets some tight. Think of this is why I had you draw the circles. One circle gets tight, it pulls on all the other circles, and everything goes. Have you ever had a body massage and they work on one part of your body and then you leave and you have a headache or you feel pressure somewhere? Usually it's people work on the body and then you feel like this tightness up here. And it's often because there is energy, there's fluid, there's lymph being moved. And then the upper part of the skull hasn't been worked with to allow the full flow and coherence of all the fluids and bones being changed. So while this might seem a little advanced and a little more body work therapy-ish, you will work with these spaces and places with self-touch. When you get into the diaphragm lessons, you'll work with these diaphragms when you roll the head and move the pelvis and the spine. When we get into the breath lessons, you'll work with the ribs, the lungs. The kidney adrenals we'll work with. So inevitably, by the time we move through all labs, by the time you move through all labs, you will have touched on all of these joints and diaphragms in some way, shape, or form. So as you can see, this is more about just feeling sensation and waiting for it to go away. It's we're really working with this body in a very different way. Finally, number six. Kidney adrenal interface. So, this one is like, again, one of the bread and butter lessons in that it is, and I'll read this here now, it's the primary organ system, one of the primary organ systems that goes on alert. Alert is the word there, and reacts severely. In a stressful situation. Stressful is the next word. Stressful situation. We work with the kidney adrenal interface so that we can stop the system from hurting itself, from scaring itself. This is really important. We work with the kidney adrenal system. So that we stop the system from hurting and scaring itself. When we have had a lot of stuff happen to us, we don't realize that these adrenals that pump out adrenaline and other stress chemicals, cortisol, that they are always on, always on. We've gotten so used to them being on that we just think that's the way life is. But what occurs is over time, and this is where youth can be on some people's side. You know, kids, we don't tend to see get chronic illness, although we're seeing more of it these days. But, you know, we can sustain until we're in our 30s, hopefully, if not, hopefully 40s. But this adrenalized push of threat, these adrenals are just pumping, pumping, pumping. And then eventually they're like, I can't do this anymore. I'm tired, right? And this is where we get what we might call adrenal fatigue, where we get this burnout, where there's no more juice in the system. And literally, it's not just the adrenals, but the kidneys are under the adrenal. That's why it's called adrenal. And again, super easy to find this online. And we show the pictures when we get to the kidney adrenals. But most people have two kidneys, and on each kidney, there's a little hat. that's an adrenal, and that's the gland. And so when the adrenal gland is just going and there's high pressure and stress, the kidney is also being impacted because the kidney filters urine, our pee, and it is one of the filtration systems. So if we're constantly in a state of high blood pressure and stress and sympathetic activity, those little adrenal and kidneys are constantly working. And so we want to work with them. And this work comes from my learning and trainings with Kathy Kane. She really popularized working with this in her chronically ill clients. It's less about the thinking and the thoughts. It's about getting at that level and being like, hey, you've been going at a high clip since you were born, maybe even in utero. And I'll teach this in the lessons, but it's like, we're just going to maybe suggest it might be okay to just start to lower the gas pedal. Now, I'm using those words very carefully. Why wouldn't I say to the kidney adrenals, hey, just chill out, just calm down? I don't say that and I don't teach that because if they've been protecting you and keeping you safe, they're not going to want to chill out. And so we have to, almost like an animal that's been abused, we can't just go and hug it and say, they're there, you know, furry creature that's been abused. Let's just get you happy. You have to be very slow. You have to be very calculated. You have to show them routine and certainty and safety. And then they decide if they go closer to you. Your kidneys and adrenals and all of your organs are the same way. So when you start to talk to them, they might actually have resistance. And when you get into the kidney adrenal lessons, there will inevitably be many of you, and that's okay. This is okay. This happens. When your kidney adrenals start to relax, there'll be a after effect where they tighten even more because they're like, no, we're supposed to stay like this. And you've just asked us to relax and we're going to take more energy to stay protected. So this is where this work is not usually cut and dry. There's a little kind of back and forth, a little kind of cajoling with these organs to say to them, we're just going to make the request to have a little less intensity, and that's all we're going to do. And then we'll do some other things. So I wanted to just give a little more context as to why these are so important. And it can take time. And that's what my next line here says. It can take up to, and this is just a crude, I should say, a crude estimate. It's about 2 years. It can take up to 2 years to recover and repair the circuitry, even after the stressful stimulus or the stressful events are gone. Our alum are here, and they're here because they know that this is something that takes time. And the thing that's important to realize is sometimes our system won't come down and out of this stressful habit wiring until we're in a safer space. So what that means is sometimes people will say, I don't understand, Irene. I'm finally in an amazing relationship, or I finally have a job that I actually enjoy, and I'm enjoying this thing that I'm doing, or I'm living in this beautiful place and I've got all the things I need. All my basic needs are met. Why am I now so tired? This should energize me. And it's because the system, and especially this kidney adrenal system, is like, oh wow, we can finally chill out now and rest. We're gonna make you rest. And we're gonna put you into bed because you have not been able to rest because you've been on high alert for so long. So not everyone will have this happen. Everybody's a bit different, but this is often why, and I'm sure there are people here who have experienced this, where it made no sense that they got more fatigued when they found safety. And it's because the system was looking for that break. And then the key piece is you don't want to think that things are wrong. You don't want to think that you're sick. It's the system is needing to do a massive foundational rearrangement. You've got to build back up. So this comes back to the swimming pools. So we're going to go to page four and you'll see more swimming pool pictures. And before we do that, is everyone still connected to the ground under them? Have you lost that connection? I see some, yep, I am. And others is like, oh, I forgot. And that's okay, right? So again, just a reminder, I'm seeing a few people ask me in direct message that the chat is a little just disorienting, a little too busy. Yeah, like I said at the beginning, the chat is really just for if I have a prompt that I want you to put in there. And I did mention, if there's a question that you have that is related to something you missed in the training call or something that's just burning, you may ask that, but inevitably Jen might say, please ask this in the general question thread in SPSM. So this really isn't a place to have chats back and forth with your peers. Okay. So again, just remember we're in learning, we're in a training call, and the focus should be on that. If you feel that you cannot stay with this and pay attention, that is fine. Come back to the recording when you're a bit more focused. And apparently you can mute the chat. I don't mute the chat because I want to know what might be needed from my team. So yeah, someone said you can mute the chat and hit the bell. Thank you, Kathy. All right, so swimming pool. So let's get to page four here. So A, the many balls packed into this pool represent, as I mentioned at the top of our call, stressors, toxicities that are stored in the body. And in a simple way, we just say this is nervous system dysregulation. And if you look at that swimming pool, lots of balls packed in there. And when they're that packed in, they can't be moved very well. If you just actually sit back and think about that, if you really did have a container or a swimming pool with tons of balls in it, would it be easy to put more stuff in there? No. How would you get stuff out? You'd have to like kind of, chisel your way in and get those balls out. And when they're that packed in, there's no flow. So many balls means, so we'll go through some potentials here. Number one, the first line to write out, old survival stress, old survival stress and trapped trauma. So this is that accident you never worked with or you forgot about. This is, the adversity that occurred maybe when you were young. These are the things that we live through and survive. But as we know, these things trapped inside create trouble. So that's one thing that the balls are. Number two, daily chronic stress. I think that's a given, but that's the go, 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 not enough time to pause, constantly doing, doing, doing. Go, go, go. No moments to just sit and feel and orient. And by the way, to shift these daily go, go, goes and stressors, we don't need hours on end. It can happen in 30 seconds. In a couple minutes, we can shift out of our stress physiology if we're intentional about it. Number three. Again, these are the balls that get stuck in our swimming pool, biological impulses that are not followed. So I think it goes without saying when we have a lot of gas in our guts and in our intestines and we don't let it out, we get bloated. That's one way we get bloated. It's not the only reason if we think about bloating in the digestive system, right? Have you ever been on a plane and you're afraid to let gas out and then you get off and you're like so bloated? Right. And it's because there's been no release. It's also because the pressure of that plane shifts and pressurizes our intestines. This is why we often feel thick and heavy on a plane, even if we move, it's because the whole system has had pressure on it. right? So it's squeezing our system. So we want to move these biological impulses so that we don't stick things that shouldn't be stuck. Number four, not letting emotions out. So again, this would be classic emotions, not just things like tears and anger, but joy. You know, do we hold back our joy? Do we hold back the feelings of good because we're afraid that if we do that, something bad will occur? You know, these are all things that humans do to keep themselves safe. Now, this is also unconscious emotion. Sometimes we don't realize we're holding in anger because we are so functionally frozen. Everything's just super fine. I got no problems. I'm the cool cat in a stressful situation, right? So many of us, and I know this is very true in some of my friends who are retired military. Very grateful for those people because they've taught me a lot about how much we can shut down in states of stress. But under that, there are impulses that are being trapped, that are being held back. This is the same for, say, first responders. I say this often. You know, these are real life examples of people who they might really want to let their emotions out when they see something not nice, but their job demands them to show up and be of service and help. And this is why so many of these individuals end up with PTSD, or they have a lot of addictions to cope with the intense balls that are stuck in their swimming pool. And of course, there's a gazillion other examples of all the ways us humans hold these things in. Five, sensations that aren't felt. So this actually ties in with emotions. And when we get into learning more about emotions and feelings and sensations, we're going to discover, you're going to discover that emotions start in the body through sensation. And these sensations arise in our tissues and organs. This is why that word interoception is so important. If we don't get connected in accurate ways to our internal environment, it is darn hard to be accurate with our emotions because we aren't accurate with our sensations. So, in other words, we want to really get better at listening to these sensations, these heat, the tightness, the shivers, right? The sharp pains that maybe we've been ignoring, the tightness in the jaw, the ways in which our body holds. So again, this long list, these are the ways in which we trap stuff inside. These are the balls in the swimming pool. B, next one down. So if you look at that picture, as simple as it is, we've taken two balls out. We've made an exit. And you can already see, if you just visually look, there's more space in that pool. So the goal is to release these balls, old stressors, chronic daily stress, biological impulses, our emotions, our sensations. Even if you never in the next 12 weeks touch on an old trauma, by listening to your daily sensations and following your impulses and whatever comes through in this moment forward, you will be taking things out or not allowing things to go back in. Does that make sense? For example, my classic stubbing my toe example. I haven't stubbed my toe in a while. Oops, what just happened? Ah, where'd everyone go? Don't touch anything, anyone. We'll leave the chat. It's okay. I often use an example. In my days when I was clumsier and more disconnected, I would often bump into things. And one of the worst things was if you were to stub your toe, my toe. I've stubbed my toe many times. Doesn't have to be stubbing a toe. It could be you burn your finger on the steam of your kettle, right? Or you slam your finger in a door accidentally, or a real accident. Maybe you do fall and you trip and you hurt yourself. In those moments, from this day forward, your job is to stop, feel, express whatever is coming up and through, and let the energy, let the bodily responses be there. If you do nothing but that over the next 12 weeks, you will be limiting more stressors, more balls getting stuck in your system. And believe it or not, if that's something that's new to you, it will create way more capacity in your body, in your system. And what that shows your body and your brain and your nervous system is it says, whoa, Irene's paying attention to me now. She's not shoving this down. She's not rushing. And that might mean that some other things can start to bubble up that have been buried so deep in that pool, in the deep end, but there's been no space for those other things to come out. So that's one of the reasons why we want to work with these things. Number five, so page five. Someone said, what if your body is scared to feel those sensations? Well, this is why we teach you orienting. This is why the first lesson last week was resourcing. What are your resources? So in other words, we might feel intensity in the body, but it's like, okay, I like my warm, fuzzy blanket, right? It's going to help contain, or maybe it helps to move, or maybe it helps to listen to music or watch a funny show. There's nothing wrong with doing something like that to shift your focus out of the intensity that is inside your body, inside your swimming pool. Right? These are why we're layering as much as we can the basic stuff in the first couple of weeks. But use your resources, orient, basics. Okay, number C, top of the page. We want to create more exit paths to release those balls. That's the word, exit paths. So now this picture has shifted. We have two openings. So I have a picture where one ball is going out, but one is coming out. One is going in, one is coming out. We cannot ever assume that we won't have stress. There will always be stressors. There will always be things that are going to occur that aren't the nicest. But the key is how can we take those in a way that we know, okay, this is a bit intense. I'm just going to do some resourcing right now. I'm going to do some orienting. I'm going to allow myself to cry. I'm going to allow myself to stomp my feet on the ground. I'm going to feel my feet and just go for a walk and let this intensity shift. So these ways that we engage with ourselves to sense these things and process them creates these exit paths. Next line down. We also want to make space in general. Space is the word. We also want to make more space in general. So now if you look at this pool, we've actually made it bigger. And in making it bigger, we've actually got the same amount of balls in there. But if you just even visually look at that, there's more space, right? That's capacity. So space means capacity. That's this next line. Space means capacity. This comes back before we get to these lines. This comes back to those areas in the body that I was talking about, the joints, the diaphragms, the ability for the bones to move so that they're not just all tight and immovable, right? So the more we can move our spine, our hips, our pelvis, our eyes, this creates space. I think this is one of the reasons why, and this is not the only. This is maybe an oversimplification, but we know the research is pretty clear that movement, even just going for a walk for 20 to 30 minutes, is so helpful for the body, for the mind. Exercising is helpful for the body and the mind. And I know if one is still living in a lot of adrenal fatigue and burnout, they're limited, But even moving just in your environment with your arms and your legs, walking around your home, that increases capacity because you're opening up the flow, goes back to those circles. Blood needs to flow, lymph needs to flow. That does build capacity. Okay, number one here are these lines. So here are some examples. So sense and be with the body and the sensations. So sense and be with the body and the sensations. Now, of course, I know because there's been a few notes in the chat around what if the sensations are too scary? And this is accurate. This means, just a second, let's mute. I don't know how that happened. There we go. So at the beginning of this work, if our system has not been good at or regulated at listening to sensations and they've just been too intense and overwhelming, then yes, it's maybe too much to sense everything. This is again why we swing our attention to the outside. This is why we swing our attention to our resources back to lesson one from lab one. So we work with this. This is very much not a black and white where, okay, I'm just going to sit with my sensations and feel them, and then I'm going to feel better. For some of us, we might need to work with the tiniest bit of sensation and then move on out. This is where that word titration comes in, which Peter Levine classically brought into the somatic trauma space. We want to dip our toe into the uncomfortable sensations, and then it's like, that's enough. Okay, now we're going to resource. Now we're going to just feel the feet, or now we're going to look and see the sky or the trees, or now we're going to sense our body and not worry about what's deeper inside. Everyone's going to be different in terms of how you might titrate, but that's kind of the name of the game. And a lot of this is tiny little dips into the sensation and then knowing that's enough. That's enough for today. Number two, or the second line down, experience and emote emotions. So again, this comes back to, are you holding back the tears? Are you holding back when we get into healthy aggression, the growl? Are you holding back the saying no, the setting of the boundary? What might be found, and there's a really good interview with one of your peers, SBSM alumni. His name is Joe Martino. And we talk about him falling off of a ladder. It's not too long ago. It's on my website or on the YouTube channel. But he explains how after the initial fall, and yes, it hurt, and he was a bit bruised and, licked his wounds. He found that there was these moments where he would just start crying for no reason. It had nothing to do with that accident. It was something had a ball of the pool, like he had this big injury, this big fall, and it's like it kind of opened up his capacity to be with a really intense event. So he processed a really intense event in real time. He fell off a ladder. It was scary, but he did all the right things. He oriented, he felt, he expressed, he called his wife, like, this is what happened, but I'm okay. And then over the course of weeks after that, if you think about the swimming pool, it's like these old balls were just coming out for no reason. So this is what can happen when you work on something in the moment. Now, it doesn't have to be falling off of a ladder. It could be something, like I said, like a little bang of the elbow, right? Or something where you dropped something and it shatters, and you feel immense shame. It's like, well, it's just a plate. It's like, how does this connect to back in the time when you were little and you got in trouble when you made these mistakes, for example, right? So, this is how we keep going back to old stuff. It doesn't always, we're not trying to find it. Sometimes it will just naturally come out when we're working in real time with current stressors. So that goes back to experiencing and emoting emotions. Notice what's happening inside. Next line. So, just again, I'm kind of repeating what I've said. This is that interoception. Am I hungry? Am I thirsty? Do I have to go to the bathroom? Am I cold? Am I warm? Am I tired? Do I have energy? Right? Next line down. Thinking clearly and communicating. So this is a little more thought-based, but this ability, so space means the capacity. When we have more space, there's less survival stress in the system. What many of our alum have said is as they gain more capacity, as they gain more awareness, as their system recovers and it's not in threat, this higher brain up here, this prefrontal cortex that's right underneath your forehead, it starts to heal, it starts to recover. And you will find that you will start maybe remembering things differently. You'll actually be able to read and retain the information. You might be able to communicate clearer. You might have conversations that are different because you're not in survival mode. So again, when we have, this is in reference to having more space, more capacity, we start to think clearer. Our brain processing starts to get better. Our creativity, which is what this brain is really meant for at the higher level, starts to spark up. And in another one, I know this is a cramped, there's a lot here. When we have more space, when we have more capacity, we can be with stress that's occurring way easier. So a common thing people will say is, I can't look at anything that's happening in the world. It's too stressful. It's too much. And yes, that's true. And when you have this regulation on board and more capacity, you take in that information, but it doesn't trigger you into activation or shutdown. You may have compassion for it. You may go, wow, that's a lot, but it doesn't impact you and put you into more dysregulation or into more activation or shutdown. So that will shift too as you have more capacity. Final picture, the final one, the best scenario, that's the first word. The best scenario is having or is continual exits, and lots of space. So now this picture has one, two, three, four, five. My eyes can't focus. There's a lot of exits, right? And so there's balls coming in, there's balls going out, but inevitably, what's in the inside? Way less balls. Because there is this continual recycling. Never in any moment are you just holding on to things that are coming at you. You're feeling them, you're processing, and you're moving them out. That is our goal. Again, for some of us, we're at the very beginning. And I know this might be like a lot to take in, but come back to this swimming pool and beach ball analogy. As simple as it is, it's like we want to keep making that pool bigger. And maybe that means not feeling anything right now on the inside. Maybe that means having so much time resourcing to the outside, but consciously doing it. This is not avoiding. This is a conscious intention. I am now going to do this because it is something that I like and it's positive and it's going to help me connect to the moment. Maybe it's not going to get you to connect to the feelings inside, but it's going to keep you active in the moment and not shutting off in the moment. That's why active, conscious, intentional resourcing is not. Dis it's not that is not a disconnect and it's not an avoidance. So that will be my final thing that I'll say on today's call is when we can use more of this conscious intention. And I understand that when we have a lot of dysregulation, that can be tough. But even if it's just like the tiniest bit, and you're using that conscious intention to resource to things that you know are positive, that is a step in the right direction to building your capacity. And if you can focus on that and keep focusing on that, you might start to find, huh, wow, I'm resourcing with this big, beautiful blanket that I love, and my breath is starting to shift. Wow, I just felt a gurgle in my belly. That's the sign that the digestive system, the rest digest, is kicking on. So this is why you want to have this loose attention to what's going on in your body, because you might find as you're resourcing to the external, the inside starts to shift indirectly. So, training call number one, that's all I got for you today. Was a lot. And if you go back, and I always recommend people go back and review, you will notice that it's the same kind of theme, just over and over again, but just in different examples. So, story for today, how can we make our swimming pools bigger? And how can we let, or how can we keep new stressors from coming in? Worry about the old ones later. And we'll get into this when we get into the next few training calls, the differences between when should we do this versus when should we do that? And this is trial and error, and it's something that you have to play with. So just a reminder, again, that there are places on the site to ask questions. So the general question thread is for general questions. Under each lesson, there's a forum where you can ask questions, or you can read what other people are asking, and that's one way to learn. And then there's a peer-to-peer thread. So if you want to have a chat and get to know other people, go to the peer-to-peer thread under member communication. Next call will be a Q&A on Thursday. So Seth will be doing that. And we'll see you for the next training call. Thanks also to Jen, who was in here helping out with the chat. Thanks, everybody. Bye.